Burn, baby, burn. The GOP in Colorado is a blind party turning a blind eye to an unsightly and evil process which continues to rape, plunder, and steal from its own members. In an incredible act of hubris, the GOP in Colorado has decided to let the frustrated and furious conservative and Republican members of its own party stew in their own juices as it removes even the pretense of a vote. Incredibly, the GOP, the grand old party, has canceled its vote in Colorado, meaning that representative government in the United States is now on life support and flatlining. That means 1 million voters deactivated. Talk about disenfranchising the voters. Well, apparently the GOP canceled where the declaration states, and I quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." So the Republican National Convention really doesn't care about the angry masses after all. What a shock. If Americans needed an illustration of how corrupt the system that we've come to hate has become, this is it. An entire state justly described as purple because it combines both conservative and liberal elements has been commandeered by the hated GOP elite and stripped of its delegates, and then all awarded to Cruz. And the hilarious part is that Cruz seems to believe that the party will then waltz with him at the convention, but instead, in my opinion, they appear intent on taking Paul Ryan to the center of the dance floor as Cruz sits on the side, drinking his punch and crying into his hands. Whatever Trump's supposed fatal weakness, and yes, he does have his flaws like all candidates, why do the idiot elites believe he must be removed? How is this supposedly better than allowing the process to run even if it results in a candidate they don't approve of? And how is this not a dangerous precedent, allowing the national party to decide what the states stand for? To put the icing on the cake, the state GOP tweeted afterwards, "We did it. Hashtag never Trump." After the cancellation of the election, Cruz is clearly confusing a rigged game with a clear convention where the people's votes count. There seems no way the GOP can use these tactics and carry the grassroots support that Trump has engendered into the general election. So when the GOP gets done burning down the process, infuriating all the Trump voters, and then losing the general to Hillary, will they finally feel proud of themselves for another embarrassing and horrific act of Harry Caray? Will they jump to their feet and applaud themselves? Another act of suicidal idiocy? Stay tuned, sports fans. 609, and I just can't believe it. I mean, I just another stupid top-down decision by the GOP that at some point, you know, why do they think people are supporting Trump? I mean, is there purpose to get rid of all the Trump voters when they get rid of Trump? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. So April 11th, 2016. I can't follow the thinking of these people. I don't know. It makes me feel, and this is not about supporting Trump. This is about doing what's right. It is not right to cancel the primary election of a state just so that you can kill one candidate. I mean, Trump approached it fair and square. He didn't even spend that much money. He's gotten national support from the masses. And yet, because the party itself does not support him, because he doesn't support the party, because they're rotten to the core, as you can see from this, he's getting kicked out. It is just unbelievable. Let me play just a little clip for you here from CBS Denver. Ted Cruz completes a sweep of Colorado delegates. It's just one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever seen. Now, this was hinted at about a year ago, but I didn't know that they'd actually go through with canceling the vote. I mean, you know, I don't know where these people are coming from. But this is why the people hate the GOP. This is why the elite, the leadership class of the GOP, this is why so many people are just saying, I'm over it. You know, I am no longer going to support this party. We're going to start a third party, or I'm going to drop out. And this, they don't care. They don't care. And they don't care. I mean, what else can you say? I mean, their only interest is in it killing this guy, Trump. And so anyway, let me just play a little Alex Jones for you. It's not that I have to see Trump win, because, you know, he doesn't have the primary in his pocket yet. But it's the process. You don't take away people's votes to make sure that you get your own vote. Here we go. Here's a little Alex Jones.
Missouri, you're on the air. Now, I guess you're one of those conspiracy theorists that thought we used to actually popularly vote. You're not one of those terrorists, are you?
I think it's totally ridiculous. They think the American people are stupid. I'm stunned by it. I am just stunned. I don't know what to think.
Why be stunned? We never had voting. We don't have ads saying one person, one vote. We don't have ads saying go out in your duty and laws about fraud and how important each vote is, or Jim Crow laws blocking blacks from voting, or, you know, poll taxes and the Civil Rights Act. Forget your right to vote. Forget all that. That never existed. They say now your vote doesn't count.
Alex, they really think that Republicans have no clue. They think the Democrats are gods. I've gotten into quite a few discussions with my boss, and it's amazing.
Well, look, the average Democrat wants to cancel free speech and arrest everybody. I mean, these are fascist, hardcore, brainwashed zombies.
Well, what do you think? Do you think that Trump would consider running on the independent ticket if the RNC...
Sure, but I mean, if they're going to steal him at the Republican level, they're going to steal him anyways, which isn't a negative thing overall. It's showing that we've got a dictatorship, an oligarchy, a Politburo, a central committee. I mean, that's what it is. That's the model. And we're just in incredible deep water now. I mean, this is a new level. I mean, I this is how martial law came to America. This is how we fell. I mean, this is, you're seeing in slow motion the demolition of our republic. Let's go ahead and talk to Jeremy in FEMA Region 6. I'm in FEMA Region 6.
All right, so just a little feel right there. But, you know, the thing is that if you're going to come in and take this entire state and hand it to Ted Cruz, and, you know, I don't know. I think that probably, from what I recall, wasn't Trump ahead in Colorado, and now they've just I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, what is the purpose of pretending to have popular voting? You know, is the declaration not premised upon the popular vote? How else are we going to know what the people believe? And then you're going to turn around, you're going to cancel the election, or the caucus. There's no caucus, there's no popular vote. And then you're just going to hand all of the delegates to Cruz. How is this going to build popular support? How is this going to build momentum? You know, I don't really get it. I don't know. It's just discouraging to hear this. And it's breaking my heart that these guys are willing to do anything to stop this candidate when the candidate has a lot of good ideas. Is he a conservative? Probably not. But was Mitt Romney a conservative when he originated Obamacare in his own state? Was he a conservative? Was John McCain a conservative? John McCain, who loved being touted by the popular press until he ran for office and he was destroyed because he was too naive. you know? So I don't know what people think is going to happen from this, but I can tell you just from my own, you know, 523-1450, if you want to comment, 805-6180, I got the text line here. What do you think is going to happen to Trump, to the Trump voters, to the race, if the GOP, you know, pretends that Trump is Hitler, which is what they like to say, and they stop him from being elected, and then they lose the election for the third race in a row, and we have a third term of Obama. How is this country possibly going to make it when you've got all of these, not just illegal people that are being swept in? Now they're saying there's some stories that say there are people that are still wet from crossing the Rio Grande that they're being forced to release, and they've got a new plan to bring in Syrians. They are absolutely destroying this country. The only people that are really doing anything about it are you and I and the Trump voters, because as far as I can tell, Cruz is a consensus candidate. He might be hated. He might be on the outskirts of the party, but he's in the party and he's representing the party. How are we going to survive as a country? I don't understand. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 618, very frustrated here and very astounded that they would be willing to go this far. You get rid of the even the pretense of running an election just so you can kill somebody just because you don't like some of their ideas. That's how you build a party. That's how you win elections. And the saddest thing is the Republican brand has never been stronger on the ground. From state to state, we've never been in a better position. We can't get the top. We can't get the presidency, though, because these elites who are indistinguishable from anybody in the Democratic Party are going to make sure that they run a candidate that they agree with, which means they're going to get killed every time. And now you're destroying the process to stop one person. You've got to be kidding. Anyway, 619 on the button, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. We'll be back, and I am just furious. All right, you heard it right. The GOP has handed all the delegates out of Colorado to Ted Cruz. And if you're Donna, you're doing backflips. But do you really think that, you know, here is Cruz. Cruz is absolutely just besides himself because he now realizes he doesn't have to be the most popular person in the race to win. I mean, that's perfect for him. You know, he's a person that many people hate, and I'm not saying that I hate him, but he's a person that is an acquired taste at best. He's like instant coffee, you know? And so he is, of course, he's thrilled. Now, he's a Christian. I mean, do Christians believe in democracy, or is he fighting? Are he and Glenn Beck fighting for the future of the kingdom, you know, so that anything goes? All right, let me give you some other stories here. We've got some big weather news, and I've got a couple of clips for you. More water for the West, which is great news. And another one is there's some severe weather that is passing from the panhandle of Texas over to East Texas and then into Louisiana again and in across the South and up a little bit. Hillary is also winning because of rigged elections. Sanders has won seven in a row, pardon me, and Hillary's getting more delegates. So it's only a question of a few more days, probably before Sanders is officially out of the race, a few more weeks. They say Paul Ryan is waging a national campaign himself not necessarily for president, but he obviously is running for president. He's putting out all kinds of he's the head of the House. He's putting out all kinds of videos of himself doing leadership and statesmanship like quality. So maybe some of the listeners will transfer their love from Cruz to Paul Ryan. Although Paul Ryan, I would assume, is a Catholic, isn't he? Not a evangelical. U.S. deploying 50 B-52 bombers to the Middle East for the first time in 25 years. Now, remember when the president told us we were already doing everything that we could? Kind of interesting. IRS is being sued for refusing to release secret church investigation procedures. So they've been going after churches. They've been going after the Tea Party. And I'll have more for you on that. Long lines in the TSA section this summer. So be prepared for hours on end waiting. Now, check this out. In the new world, there's a lot of women who use sperm banks. Well, there's a mentally ill felon who lied, and he put his biological product in the sperm bank, and 36 kids were created through this, and wonder if this any of his mental stuff is genetic. And United States is facing a $4.3 trillion pension fund hole. And some of the things I'm going to cover, Denny Hastert, a guy that was at the top, he's in the same position that Paul Ryan was in, molested at least four kids, but they know there's a lot more, one of which died from AIDS. And there's an incredible quote that comes out of that case. Obama defending Hillary as Bill goes wild against him. And I got because we've been talking about child abuse, I've got a Middle East kid sex crimes report for you. And so those are some of the stuff. All right, here's a weather report for you. Severe thunderstorms in the East.
That's the damage from 2.5-inch hail that fell in Dickens, Texas on Sunday. Wow, look at that damage. Severe weather rolled across the southern plains on Sunday, and we're still going to see this threat until Tuesday. So here's the highest threat for today. It's where you see the red. And again, large hail, this is going to be one of the main impacts. So storms will fire up through the day. We will have that highest risk for severe weather by tonight. See that nasty line of storms between Memphis and Shreveport? That is certainly something to keep our eye on. Now, by Tuesday, the threat pushes off further east. So we'll be looking at Florida in play for severe weather. That will go up through the eastern part of Alabama into Georgia and South Carolina.
All right, and I've got a little bit on your weather for the West, and some of this could affect us.
Check out this hail out of Las Vegas, Nevada. This is near Lorenzi Park, which is not too far away from the North Las Vegas Airport. Really incredible. But then we talk about McCarran International, which is about 5 miles south of downtown Vegas. This saw its third wettest April day on record on Saturday with 0.81 inches of rainfall. And then other spots across northern Las Vegas saw 1.69 inches of rain on Saturday. Even as we went into Sunday, we had some locations that picked up more than a tenth of an inch of rain in a 15-minute time frame, and that prompted some flood advisories. And keep in mind, some of these storms were really slow movers. So let's talk about what's going on. You know, we've got low pressure off the coast. It's been sending a lot of moisture in from the Pacific. Scattered showers and thunderstorms still persisting Sunday across portions of the Southwest and California. Still into Sunday night, we'll have some snow falling for portions of the Rockies, Colorado, and Wyoming. And then we've got another front that sweeps into the west towards the middle of the week. So, yeah, we've still got active weather to come.
And we are going to be affected by that, and it looks like some of the rain is going to get here. All right, let's take a little break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this story. It is so astounding that the party doesn't understand that the reason people hate their guts, I'm starting to really hate the GOP with a fury. I'm so over them. The reason people hate them in the first place is because this kind of crap, that they act like they're sympathetic to the Tea Party, that they're sympathetic to the conservative or the evangelical movement, the wing, that wing in the party. And then it turns out all they care about is not even power, because if they cared about power, you'd never run a McCain or a Romney, because these guys are going to are lambs to the slaughter. The only thing that they care about is servicing their own interests, which is large corporations and supposedly keeping ideological purity. I mean, it is a terrible situation the GOP is in, and people have to start working on a third party that eventually takes over for the GOP. Just like the Whigs were wiped out, the GOP must go. It must be sent home to die. 630 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, and 805-6180. We'll be right back on one of my favorite songs of all time, On the Border, Al Stewart. It's about transitions. It's time to transition these stupid GOP elite imbeciles out.
Fishing boats go out across the evening water, smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud, the ghost moon sails among the clouds, turns to white gold and silver on the border.
All right, so we're dealing with the aftermath here of this decision by the GOP in Colorado to cancel the election in the caucus and just hand the votes over to Ted Cruz. Now, I mean, if this is what the party stands for, why don't they do it in the rest of the elections? There's no reason not to. If that, and you know, you already heard somebody get on the, you know, I played a clip for you before, that this party stands for, the leadership of the party stands for the idea that they choose the candidate. And somebody said, well, if that's true, then why have an election? And the guy says, well, that's a great question. It's not a great question. It's a terrible question. And the answer to the question is such that, you know, the party, which is a total disaster, which everybody is starting to hate, it's not just me, the party is starting to hate this, the members are starting to hate the party because they consider it to be an unfair party that doesn't report for, you know, it doesn't stand up for what they believe. And instead of like going back to the grassroots of this whole thing, then they just turn around and make it even worse. And they put it in a situation. People are put in a situation where they can't. How do you support the GOP now? They've taken away your vote. I mean, if they did that here in the state, if they took away all the votes of the voters in this state, all the GOP people, and just handed the delegates to Cruz because they like him better, I mean, is that really the answer to the problems? And then at the end of it, they put out, "We did it, never Trump, Colorado GOP." This is an official tweet from the Colorado GOP, and then they get up and say, "We have no idea how this happened. It was no, but none of us." I mean, give me a break. Anyway, here's this little tweet.
Colorado GOP. This was the tweet that showed up on their Twitter page last night. "We did it. Hashtag never Trump."
Now, the party quickly deleted the tweet, then sent out this apology that we have pulled up here now. The quote, "The last tweet was the result of an unauthorized access to our account and in no way represents the opinion of the party we are investigating."
From the Colorado GOP.
Yeah, right. That's very believable. By the way, and why wouldn't they stand up and embrace that? Because the fact of the matter is that they did achieve what they wanted to. And what they wanted to do was to stop Trump. I mean, obviously they're thrilled to death. So anyway, here's a little bit more. And this is these are both reports from Denver 7. Check this out.
"Cruz technically won all of Colorado's delegates, but the math breaks down a different way. He's leaving Colorado with at least 30 delegates. Four other delegates getting sent to the RNC are listed unpledged, but were nominated as Cruz supporters. And then there are three party leaders who are unpledged until they get to Cleveland in July. One of those is Colorado GOP Chairman Steve House, who is joining us today." Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. We're also joined by Krista Kafer, co-host of Kelly and Kafer on KNUS Radio. So thank you for being here. I know you've never been a Trump supporter, but we have to start with this tweet that went out, Steve, that said, "We did it, hashtag never Trump." That went out from?
It went out from our account, but yes, we did not send it out. So we are doing an investigation right now to find out how it got out, because we would never do that. There's no point in trying to, you know, disenfranchise a campaign that we supported while they were here.
I mean, that would be like saying that, you know, McDonald's served or Burger King served a Whopper, but it wasn't, you know, we didn't serve it. It came out of our window. It was fried in our restaurant, but we didn't serve it. You know, it wasn't us. Just dumb.
That was very gracious in letting us know that we did a great job for them while they were here at the Trump campaign. And there's no way anybody on my staff, certainly not me, would ever put that out.
Do you know how many people have access to that account? I mean,
we've got a process going on to find out who actually knew the password to that account. It's a small number of people, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was one of those people. It may have been somebody from the outside. We're down to knowing exactly when the tweet went out, and we know the IP address that it went out from. It's only a matter of time before we figure out how it came out.
Well, let me ask this, because I can tweet from my account. I can tweet from the Denver 7 Politics account for Politics Unplugged. I just have to make sure which one is checked. Are you saying it's just not that simple, that someone on the staff accidentally meant to put it on their personal page, but it ended up on the Colorado GOP?
That was the very first thing we checked, and we found no evidence that that happened. Because really, the person who does all of our tweeting at this point is our communications director, and he definitely didn't do it. And so if somebody had TweetDeck loaded on a laptop and it had a password from the past, that was the other concern, was to somebody who used to work here have it on TweetDeck, and that's how it happened? We found no evidence that that happened that way either, but we're close to figuring it out.
Well, no matter what, it went out all over the country. A lot of people were talking about it. Does it taint Colorado's process yesterday in any way?
I talked to the Trump campaign last night and also this morning. They know we didn't do it. They know that we wouldn't do it. I mean, they know who I am. They know our staff.
This is so ridiculous to listen to. Anyway, we'll take another break here, and got a little bit of weather for you, local weather. Kelly O'Connell, a very infuriated Kelly O'Connell. These guys are destroying the GOP, and it is just absolutely jaw-dropping to watch. 641 AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 to call in if you think I'm wrong. Call in. If you share my outrage, feel free to call in. 805-6180. What can the Trump supporters do at this point? What do you think? We'll be back.
On my wall, the colors of the maps around me. From Africa, the winds, they talk of change is coming. The torches flare up in the night. The hum that sets the farms alight to spread the word to those who are waiting on the border.
All right, so I've got a little bit of analysis now on this situation that's going on. It's quite possible, despite the fact that Ted Cruz got all of the votes that come out of Colorado, it's quite possible that you can get all 95 votes out of New York, even though it's not a winner-take-all state. The fact of the matter is that if you get enough percent, then it will be winner-take-all, and Trump is surging in New York. He's, I think, something like 55% or more. All right, so, I mean, am I an outraged Trump supporter and I'm lashing out? No, I'm astounded. I'm absolutely astounded that they would do this. If Ted Cruz doesn't have the support, are you kidding me, to get these votes on his own, why cancel the election and give it to him? Because that's what people already hate. They already hate the guts of these people. And so anyway, here's a little bit from the election, and this is from CNN, the so-called election, the non-election in Colorado. This is what's got people's blood boiling.
So this is the craziness of Colorado's process. There's 600 people who are running to be national delegates, and they are making speeches that are 10 seconds each right now in the hope that people will fill out their number.
Patrick Davis, Trump conservative. 114.
Vote calling Raptor. Number 38, you gotta have cojones.
So the speeches were 10 seconds long.
We'll stand up unplanned in Cleveland.
We're a nation of laws, not men. And even astronauts will agree with that if you present it in the right way. So number 43.
And these are people that are trying to get they're trying to get nominated to go. All right, here is how can Donald Trump get to 1,200 delegates? Well, let's see here. I'll just play this for you. This is from last night. Okay, check this out. Donald Trump, 56%, Ted Cruz, 22%, John Kasich, 17% in the New York GOP primary.
Thanks a lot. That was amazing. All right, well, less than 2 weeks out from the New York primary on the Republican side, Donald Trump is a commanding lead in the polls over his rivals. As it currently stands, Trump has 743 delegates. He needs to win 64% of those remaining to reach the majority by the convention. How does he get there? Can he? Republican strategist and president and founder of Heinemann Strategies, Lisa Booth, joins us now. She has done the math. Lisa, it's great to see you this morning.
Hi, Tucker. Good morning.
So just to clarify, it is possible for Donald Trump to get to the majority by July.
You're right. Yes, he's the only one right now that has a chance of actually securing that 1,237 number. However, I've got to tell you, it's going to be tough for him. He's got a very narrow path here, so he's got to do really well. Right now, he's been getting about 46%, and he actually needs to improve upon those margins of getting, a little over 60%
right.
of the remaining delegates to get that 1,237.
Okay, so this is enormously complicated, the math here, and you've done it. Let's go month by month. Let's just break it down quickly and make it a little more simple. April.
Sure. So we've got the month of April. April is going to be really key here because, as we know, he's had losses in Wisconsin. He needs to reclaim the narrative. He needs a big win under his belt. We've got New York, his home state, tailor-made for Donald Trump, 95 delegates at stake there. And then on April 26th, we head over to the Northeast. We stay up there. We've got numerous contests there, Rhode Island, Delaware, which is a winner-take-all state. So the month of April, he needs to get about 189 delegates to try to keep on his path to 1,237.
That would leave him at 932, best-case scenario. Then we get to May. What happens then?
Right. So May is also an important month. Well, he's really looking at the Northeast on April 19th and the 26th and California on June 7th, but he's not going to be able to get there with just those contests alone. He's got to win in May. He's got to win some of these contests as well. So he's looking at about 127 delegates in the month of May. There's contests almost every week in May. So he's going to have to bring home some of those delegates in those proportional states as well. So Indiana is also going to be a big state for him. That's the first contest on May 3rd. So if he's coming off some major wins in the Northeast in April, that could help carry him to Indiana and pick up some major delegates there.
Yeah. Some of those states are going to be tough for him, like Indiana, I would predict. But at best case, he gets to 1,059 at the end of May, and that brings us into the final month of voting, June. What happens then?
Right. June's a huge, huge date. Obviously, this is the last date of contest. You've got California, which is 172 delegates at stake, which is so important for him to do well there. His campaign is estimating that hopefully he gets around two-thirds of that 172. So in the month of June, he needs to get around 178 of the delegates. You know, mind you, it's not just June at stake here. You also have Washington and Oregon where he needs to pick up delegates as well. Also New Jersey, which is a winner-take-all state. I believe there's 51 delegates at stake there. He needs to sweep that state.
Hmm. Interesting. He's going to need a lot of momentum in order to pull it off, to get two-thirds of California.
He absolutely
not,
is.
Not so easy.
All right. So the only person who technically could take the place of Trump, because you're supposed to have won eight states, a majority in eight states, would be Ted Cruz. But it would have to be handed to him in a brokered convention. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that Trump could win, but I mean, there's just this one debacle in Colorado could be the death knell of his campaign, because they say that he doesn't have the support to get to a second round. So anyway, 6:51, and we'll take one more break and come back and just a little bit more on these delegates. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text.
You never see the change from day to day. No one knows that there's a custom slip away.
All right, so I just got a text. I just got a text that seemed to suggest. I just got a text that would seem to suggest that I gave a kind of a cold interview with Mr. Hakes, but I enjoyed having him on, and you know, sometimes I thought he was done when we finished, so. Anyway, Craig Buckingham's going to be coming on. I don't endorse candidates, but anyway, not, you know, I don't know what else I can say, but we have got a situation here with the IRS is being sued for refusing to release secret church investigation procedures. And, you know, what kind of makes me wonder if, I mean, the question on my mind is, do they have a procedure, or were they just told to give churches and the Tea Party a hard time? And the watchdog groups, including the Alliance Defending Freedom and Judicial Watch, came in response. This lawsuit came in response to a legal settlement struck in 2014 with an atheist organization,
which said the IRS had resolved the signature authority issue necessary to initiate church examinations, whatever that means. And so the Freedom From Religion Foundation said the IRS has also adopted procedures for reviewing, evaluating, and determining whether to initiate church investigations. Now, I had written an article about this before on Politics in the Pulpit, the tax status of churches, and what the chances were if a minister got up in a pulpit and started to talk politics, or say, you know, the Bible teaches this on a particular issue, or that this or that candidate, you know, we're supporting him, or this would be the argument for that. I believe there have just been a very small number of churches that have actually been prosecuted. And I believe only two churches have lost their tax exempt status. Now, if you know anything about the Black Church a lot of times has politics in the pulpit. So in the history of America, it is stated that the colonial pulpits had all of the ideas of the Constitution and the Declaration before it was drafted, so that the church was the fount or the font of the ideas that came out. So precedent to America's, it's a fight for independence. There was a revival. And so this revival had swept the colonies, and they say if there hadn't been a revival, there wouldn't have been the Revolutionary War and the statement of a new country. And it's kind of interesting that now the IRS is going after churches. So, but this particular president is a very, very atheistic, or at least seems atheist or anti-Christian person in a lot of his statements and actions. So, and seems to have more enthusiasm for another religion than Christianity. 523-1450. We're going to take a break on the hour. 805-618-02 text, and we'll be back. And I've got a lot more stories for you, including Denny Hastert, and then a story on sex abuse, which is rampant in the Middle East.
I think, Leland, the best comparison is the South.
Oops. We'll be right back.
Extra delegates for the overall. So really, South Carolina, where Trump gets the stock in the room and then the lamp closed. I thought I saw down in the street, where all the centuries telling us that we're standing on the border. In the island where I grew up, nothing seems the same. It's just a pattern of remains.
All right, I wanted to get to this case about Denny Hastert, who was the former head of the House, and he was indicted for, first, it was a very strange situation. He got indicted for moving money around, and then the money was then related to a cover-up, a lot of money. And so it was, investigators looked into this, and then they were able to figure out that it was hush money that he was paying to kids. Now there's four kids that they know that he sexually abused, one of which is now dead. And the question that I'll just lay this out there, that one of the reasons I'm bringing this up, and after we have talked so much about child abuse last week, is the nature of sexual identity, of you know, the orientation of people. Many people feel like there are individuals, you know, homosexuality is acceptable because people are born that way. Now, the science doesn't necessarily agree with this. For example, identical twins, they've studied these, and, you know, for the most part, identical twins are going to grow up in the same house. Only a little bit over 50% of identical twins are both gay. So that would be an argument against it. And also the issue, I was talking to somebody last night about the topic of Astrid and everything, and what's going on in D.C., and we were talking about this issue. There was a young man named Stephen that he had this apparently four-year-long relationship with. And later this young man had come out of the closet, was living this gay lifestyle, and he ended up dying of AIDS. And it appears possible, if not probable, that Denny Hastert had a four-year sexual relationship with this kid. Now, when this kid's sister asked him when he was older, they were talking about his orientation and everything, asked him who his first sexual partner was. He said Denny Hastert, and she said she was absolutely astounded. And I've got a clip of that for you too, but here is a little bit, a few clips to fill you in on the story of Denny Hastert, who was Speaker of the House and just a few heartbeats away from leading the country. Another question I have for you also, was he chosen with this in his background so he could be blackmailed? Just curious. Here we go. This is from CBS Chicago.
Details have been murky and hidden purposely from the start, but a new published report details just how many boys may have been victimized by former House Speaker Dennis Hastert. CBS 2's Brad Edwards is live outside the Dirksen Federal Building to explain. Brad.
Good evening, dear Erica. Tomorrow, prosecutors could outline more about alleged abuse. Former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert now facing accusations from four. That the number of Hastert accusers per a Chicago Tribune investigation. Four young men who'd meet Hastert in his teaching, coaching days at Yorkville High School. Hastert now hoping for no jail time, in part claiming he's ill.
It's very similar to the cases of priest abuse.
The old and sick card is one she's seen as head of an advocacy group of priest abuse survivors.
Whether Dennis Hastert is sick now or not, the bottom line is that he should go to jail.
The victim at the center of the allegation was paid $1.7 million in hush money by Hastert. The Tribune discovered the victim at the time was in debt, out of work, and desperate. And it's the lying and the payout process that got Hastert in trouble. The exhaustive Tribune investigation identified three of the four accusers. One, long deceased.
We know one of the victims of Denny Hastert ended up dying of AIDS. Well, would he have even experienced, have been exposed to AIDS had he not been sexually violated when he was a youngster?
He's only facing time, though, for the hush money payout. Sentencing officially later this month, April 27th, Hastert could face up to 6 months behind bars, could get no time at all. We're live outside the Dirksen Federal Building. Brad Edwards, CBS 2 News. Back to you guys.
All right, Brad. Thank you.
All right. So, you know, I mean, and he showed up to this kid's, he was by this point a man. He showed up to his funeral, and his sister came up to him and said, "What are you doing here?" And this is after she'd already discovered it, and he's, you know, paying my respects or something. And she looks at him and says, "What, you know, ask him, why did you do what you did?" And he didn't even have an answer. Of course, because he was guilty as a fox in a hen house. And the story is heartbreaking. And I mean, here's the thing that I disagree with this. You claim that being gay is something, or experts claim, what the popular opinion, whatever, claim that people are born gay. What if they're not born gay? And what if this was just a confused or lonely kid and he was befriended? Because that's what they said. This Denny Hastert was a classic pedophile. He befriended these kids, and then he had a Porsche. He was a coach, you know, he was a wrestler he had also done, been the football coach and stuff, and they had won the state title in Illinois. And, you know, he had befriended this kid. And then if you think about it, or your sexual relationship between this very popular coach and this kid who was kind of a nerd. And so if you look at, you know, there's nothing romantic about these situations, because these same people, then there's something that is so rapacious and just absolutely predatory, and they never get enough. There's no number of kids that these pedophiles have sex with that satisfies them, you know, that they've got on average hundreds of victims. But here's another report on this Denny Hastert pedophile.
More sex abuse allegations have surfaced against former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert ahead of his sentencing for financial crimes later this month. Here's Jerika Duncan.
Hastert's sexual abuses are described in this 26-page document from the U.S. District Court. In it, disturbing details of at least four of Hastert's male students when he was a teacher and wrestling coach at Yorkville High School decades ago. The victims say Hastert performed inappropriate massages and sex acts on them. In one instance, a student claims Hastert told him to get on a table so he could loosen him up. Jolene Burge's older brother, Stephen Reinbolt, was mentioned in the document. Before he died in 1995, he told his sister he was molested by Hastert while he was a student at Yorkville.
He's Dennis Hastert. He was a teacher. He was a coach. He was beloved by the community. So no one was ever going to believe that this man was capable of it.
According to the document, one unnamed student, quote, recalled that defendant put a lazy boy type chair in direct view of the shower stalls in the locker room where he sat while the boys showered. Comedian Andy Rick.
You can't even make this stuff up. He sticks a lazy boy at the entrance of the shower so he can unimpeded act, you know, view of these naked boys.
From Late Night with Conan O'Brien tweeted, I went to Yorkville High School 80 to 84, and I remember this chair, purportedly to keep boys from fighting. Hastert was Speaker of the House between 1999 and 2007. In May of last year, he was indicted for lying to the FBI about $3.5 million he agreed to pay a former student to keep quiet.
Did you have a sexual relationship with this?
At first, Hastert denied any wrongdoing and claimed he was being extorted. He later agreed to a plea deal for evading bank rules and lying to the FBI about the hush money. The federal and state statutes of limitations on the allegations of sex abuse has run out. Attorney Hunter Skolnick has been following the case.
Is there justice in this case?
There's never going to be justice for these young men. He will not be punished for what he did. So at the very least, punish him for trying to hide it. Punish him for trying to hide the money trail to cover up his misdeeds.
Hastert's attorney is seeking probation at the April 27th sentencing. Elaine, prosecutors are hoping the 70.
Well, I mean, for heaven's sakes, let's hope that he gets some sort of jail time. That's so sad. I mean, in my opinion, children can be manipulated into seeing themselves as gay or can become gay through molestation. What's so incredible about that? Why is that such a crazy charge? 523-1450 and 805-6180. To text, we'll take a little break here. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Just unbelievable. I mean, this kid, in my opinion, died because of Denny Hastert and his lazy boy and his loosening up on the table. What a sicko. 7:16, 7:17, we will be back. And I've got another clip. Somebody calls into a show that Denny Hastert is on, and it sounds like one of his victims. We'll be back to play that for you. All right, so we've got this weird, I don't know if you guys have heard of this before, but if you don't know who Hastert is, probably not, but he was on CNN C-SPAN, pardon me, and he gets a phone call from somebody very weird. Check this out.
Former House Speaker Dennis Hastert has been indicted on federal banking-related charges. He is accused of structuring cash withdrawals to evade currency transaction reporting requirements and making a false statement to the FBI. The Republican from Illinois was the longest-serving GOP House Speaker in history, working the gavel from 1999 to 2007.
Illinois is our next call. Here's Bruce, Independent Line. Hi.
Hello, Danny.
Hey, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Remember me from Yorkville?
Bruce, you're on. Go ahead with your question,
gentlemen.
I think he's gone.
So, I mean, it could just be some kid calling him up, but it sounded like a weird thing. And all right, so here is a little bit from the sister of this man that died, who his first sexual contact was Denny Hastert. And Denny Hastert sounds as bad as Michael Jackson. I mean, he's got a freaking lounge chair that he puts in the entrance of the shower. Are you kidding me?
In Steve Reinbolt's high school yearbook, wrestling coach Dennis Hastert wrote that Reinbolt was his great right-hand man as the student equipment manager for the team. But at the same time, he also became a victim of Hastert, according to Reinbolt's sister, Jolene.
He damaged Steve, I think, more than any of us will ever know.
Speaking publicly for the first time, Reinbolt's sister tells ABC News that her brother shared his dark secret of abuse when he revealed to her that he was gay.
I asked him, Stevie, when was your first same-sex experience? I mean, he just looked at me and said, it was with Dennis Hastert. And I was stunned. I said, why didn't you ever tell anybody, Stevie? I mean, he was your teacher. Why didn't you ever tell anybody? And he just looked at me and said, who is ever going to believe me in this town? Who is ever going to believe me?
And was it your sense this happened more than once?
Mm-hmm. I said, you know, was it all through high school? And he said, yes. He said, you know, all through high school.
Hastert became a kind of father figure for her brother, she says. As a member of an explorers troop run by Hastert, Reinbolt was among a handful of young men Hastert took to the Bahamas, seen in these photos Reinbolt took of the boys and Hastert relaxing together.
I mean, here was the mentor, the man who was, you know, basically his friend, who was the one that was abusing him.
Steve Reinbolt died of AIDS in 1995. His sister Jolene says she confronted then-Congressman Hastert when he showed up unexpectedly at the funeral home.
I just looked at him and I said, I want to know why you did what you did to my brother. He just stood there and stared at me. And then I just continued to say, I want you to know that your secret didn't die in there with my brother.
And I want you to remember that I'm out here and that I know.
Then 2 weeks ago, after she says she had given up hope that her effort to expose Hazard would ever succeed, the FBI showed up at her door.
All right. So, wow. I mean, how could she? Here's the thing. I look for stories or some information for the background of this guy, Steve, because a lot of times these pedophiles will look for a kid who is coming out of a troubled home, a problem home, where maybe there's a parent missing, or the parent could be on drugs or is in and out of jail or something, or the parent is abusive. You've got this, you know, situation where then this person comes in and they seem like a savior, but they're really just setting the kid up for abuse. Now, I'm getting texts from somebody who claims that I'm conflating or making the same as homosexuality as child abuse, pedophilia. I am not doing that. But let me say this. Obviously, homosexuality is not the same as pedophilia, because there are many homosexuals touch children. But here's what I would like to ask you. Say there is somebody comes along like Denny Hassard, who's only apparently interested in boys. Do you call him a pedophile or a homosexual pedophile? I would call him a homosexual pedophile, because his interest is exclusively with boys. And he's, you know, you think about the risk this guy took, to the extent, and all of these pedophiles tend to be the same. They will move heaven and earth to be around kids, and they will spare no expense. They'll take any risk. And I've got some statistics coming out of a book here that I've got that'll tell you how gigantic the problem is in terms of the impact, the number of kids that are being sexually abused, and the impact, $128 billion a year on costs from the impact of this stuff. We'll take a break here. 725 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and 805-618 O'Kelly O'Connell. And feel free to call in and disagree. We'll be right back. But I'm going to have some statistics that are going to knock your socks off. They're going to sicken you.
Thank you.
Well, it's 7:30. It's about 45 degrees outside, and I'm going to have a weather update for you in just a moment, but should be partly cloudy today with a shower or two in the afternoon, according to AccuWeather. Okay, I've got a book here. Excellent book. Sexual Trauma, A Challenge, Not Insanity, Professor K. Helen Jung, MD. Got to be good if it's got Jung in the title, right? So, now there's a very famous psychotherapist, Jung, who did a lot of work on dreams and was kind of a rival to Freud, who was, you know, Freud was nuts, in my humble opinion. All right, here is a few statistics out of this book that was reported. In 1991, researchers found there were approximately 200,000 to 360,000 incidents of child sexual abuse every year in the United States. 80% of these were incest. Now, does that, I wonder if that would include repetitive, or would it be victims, you know? In South Africa, they did a study in 1999 and found that 2% of such attacks were reported. Think about that. In 1996, a survey concluded that 216,000 children were sexually abused in the United States the previous year. Roughly half were victimized by fathers, stepfathers, or other father figures. And the person who wrote this book says, I think we're seeing probably only 25 or 30% of the cases reported. Hager confirmed a study statistic. There were probably 3 million total cases a year. Now think about that. Population of America, 300 million. And 3 million cases of child sexual abuse a year. 1984, 100,000 cases reported. 1985, LA Times nationwide poll found that 27% of female respondents and 16% of male respondents reported to have been abused in their life. So anyway, you're talking about a staggering number of people that are being sexually abused. One in three girls and one in four boys, according to some studies. Now, here is some of the details of these statistics. The typical sexual offender against children is male. Begins molesting by age 15, engages in a variety of deviant behavior, molests an average of 117 youngsters. That's the thing that astounded me. Think about this. The typical pedophile, 117 victims. That's astounding. Every one of these people, every one of the victims, their health will be compromised. Their mental health will be compromised. And one of the articles that I read last week said that for cases of severe abuse, typically losing 20 years of their life. Why? Could be suicide, could be drug abuse and alcohol abuse, could be taking risks that the average person wouldn't do. Now listen to this. Those who attack young boys molest an average of 281 victims. So when Denny Hastert is being prosecuted for attacking four boys, you know there's so many more. Now, the offenders who were studied under this study by Dr. Gene Abel of Emory University in 1985 said these offenders admit to an average of 75 sex crimes. And 26% of rapists began as pedophiles, 9% began as voyeurs. So, it's just unbelievable. So anyway. Now, here is something that's more sad as well. 60% of male survivors reported that their perpetrator was female. We tend to not think of women as, you know, we tend to think of these crimes as all male coming out of men. Listen to this. This is heartbreaking. The vast majority of women in prison have been victims of violence prior to their incarceration, including domestic violence, rape, sexual assault, and child abuse.
79% of women in federal and state prisons reported physical abuse, and over 60% reported past sexual abuse. An estimated 56% of those women in prison who have experienced abuse report that their abuse included rape or attempted rape. So that's 60, that's 70% right there. In New York, a 1999 study of female prisoners at Bedford Hills found that over 80% of those prisoners had a childhood history of physical and sexual abuse. 90% had experienced that during their lifetime. It's really astounding. And so it's no surprise that we're talking $128 billion a year in costs related to these things, because these people carry the trauma with them. They tend to not report these crimes. If you see 2 to 3% are reported, and possibly more, but not a high percent, not 50%, not probably even 30%. There is, and I mentioned a book last week that they tie mental illness, bouts of mental illness, into childhood abuse. Poor families, poor homes, and child abuse. It's just shocking. And, you know, I would say, what are we doing about it? I mean, we have committed a lot of resources in the society to going after it, but we're just scraping the surface. Now, what can be done? I mean, I'm just throwing this out here for you guys to think about. I mean, it's a giant problem. And I'm wondering if our society, with this dislocated family setup that we have, in which more than 50% of kids are being born out of wedlock, are those, let's look at the statistics for kids that are born out of wedlock versus kids out of intact families and see which one is abused more. And I can, yeah, I'm sure you could guess quite easily what the answer to that is. So with all the porn online, is it decreasing or increasing the amount of sexual assault? And, the kind of ideas that we've put out there, for instance, I wonder, in teaching people that kids are born gay, does that maybe in some people's mind justify, you know, sex abuse? I don't know. Anyway, we'll take a break here. Kelly O'Connell, 737. And I'm going to now dig into sexual abuse in the Middle East. It's rampant. It is astounding. It is much worse than it is here. Blind the friendly skies, 737, a little turbulence right now, but AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 if you want to call in and add your voice, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back.
All around the day, with the gun down slow, night like a river beginning to flow, I felt the beat of my mind go drifting in the sand.
Okay, so there is a documentary that came out. We're talking about sexual abuse in the Middle East. Now, bear in mind a couple of things, that there's a radical difference in the society between the Middle East and the West, and that you can argue goes beyond religion. And one of the things that differentiates is that the sexes are separated, which causes, if you will talk to some experts, and Ralph Patai, who wrote a famous book called The Muslim Mind, says that separation of sexes encourages homosexuality, which is actually rampant over there. And there were stories that came out during the first Gulf War detailing some of this. And people are not aware that there's a lot of homosexuality in the Middle East. Now, there's also a lot of child sexual abuse. Now, part of it would be related to that separation of sexes, I would think. But part of it also has to do with a claim that Muhammad had married his favorite wife, Aisha, when she was six, and then consummated the relationship at the age of nine. And Bukhari, who writes the most famous biography of Muhammad, says that she was taken off the swing and her mother took the doll that she was holding, and that she was taken into the room, and then Muhammad consummated this. And this is certainly would be before she had developed, had gone through puberty or anything. So she would be still a child. Now, this the life of Muhammad is said to be the model for all human life. And so this has been used to justify child brides and the sexual abuse. There's another issue, and I'm going to get to all these if I can, that the Muslims tend to look down on a person who's under Sharia law would tend to look down on non-Muslims and see that any female that was captured in a war or a non-believer, their marriages would be canceled immediately, that they would be available to marry or to use as a concubine, and further that the concubines could then be farmed out as prostitutes with no shame involved. So anyway, that's the kind of, and I mentioned this before, the sex life and the family life is radically different in the Middle East. All right. So a documentary came out called The Dancing Boys of Afghanistan, which are called Baka Bazi, Boy for Play. And these are boys that are trained to be party boys. And they go to these tea parties and the men, you know, sit in a circle and then the boys dance. And then at the end of the dance, and the boys are given makeup, and a lot of times they'll give them fake breasts and put them in a dress. These little boys, you know, 10 years old, 8 years old, 12 years old, and that is their job. And they are then taken away by one of these men and used as a sex partner. So, you know, this is just child prostitution. And the Dancing Boys of Afghanistan, a PBS special, exposed an ancient custom called Baki Bazi, where rich men buy boys as young as 11 from impoverished families for sexual slavery. The boys are dressed in women's clothes and made to dance and sing at parties before being carted away by the men for sex. Owning boys is considered a symbol of status, and one former warlord boasted of having up to 3,000 boys over a 20-year period, even though he was married with two sons. And the involvement of the police did not help the boys, and the government was totally inert and did nothing to help them. So, and this is on top of the problem of child brides, which I already mentioned, is an issue in Islam because of the age of Aisha. And Aisha was, I believe, the daughter of Muhammad's right-hand man, Abu Bakr, Bakr. All right, now, here is a little bit. Okay, so I had mentioned that Muhammad's life was the model, and you can tell this by looking at the Sunnah, the model behavior of the Prophet. Everything a Prophet does can be replicated. It is the model behavior. It is how you act. So one of the things that happened was that Muhammad fell in love with his stepson's wife, and the stepson realized this, and he said to Muhammad, "I want to give you my wife." And Muhammad said, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Yes, I would be honored if you took my wife." So at that point, Muhammad then abrogates, or he cancels adoption. So there is no adoption in Islam because of this. And all right, so let's take a break, and I'm going to come back and bring you a few more things about this, but it's all pretty interesting. There are now gangs of Muslims that are operating in places like Britain, and they are grooming and developing children to use as sex partners and as child prostitutes. And it's a huge problem in Britain. And anywhere that you have Islam establishing itself, you see this, the mentality that these foreign children, these non-Muslim children, can be exploited. They were given to us by Allah. And you see that practice with ISIS, where they take the virgins and they auction them off, and then they're raped and then resold when the owner gets bored. And a lot of these girls try to kill themselves. We'll be right back. 746, 747 on the dot. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. We'll be back.
Yes, go falling in the fading light.
All right. So the prevalence of child sex abuse in Islam is pretty high, and you have to, you know, have to wonder if that may factor in into some of the rage in some of these fighters. But anyway, one of the things that they say about ISIS is that they do take children, they take boys, and they use them for sex. And according to that theory, they don't, it's not homosexual, because, okay, in that culture, if two men have sex, the man who is the active participant is not considered homosexual because he's dominating the other man. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Good morning, and who's this?
Hi, good morning. This is Marty.
Hey, Marty, good morning. What's up? What's going on?
I want to kind of confirm what you were saying concerning our Muslim neighbors and the pedophile problem. In Rotherham, England, I was reading an article yesterday in a press, it's called the New Oxford Review, and apparently 1,400 non-Muslims over a 16-year period in Rotherham, England, were victimized by roving gangs of Pakistani Muslims. And although it was repeated over and over again and reported to the authorities strenuously, it says in the article, they strenuously avoided the issue because they didn't want to appear racist. And so this went on for 16 years with more than 1,400 victims. And this is in England, of all places, Great Britain. And if it's, you know, I don't get it.
Well, it's political correctness, right?
Going. I just know as a father with, you know, three kids, I wouldn't stand for it if that happened to my son over there in Rotherham, England. Heaven forbid, I'd probably be in jail.
Well, they said that one of the problems, there was a guy that went, I mentioned this on the show last week, there was a sergeant in the Marines, and he heard some screams, and he went outside of his tent, and he, you know, walked
and
over.
And he's the one who gets court-martialed.
Right, he gets court-martialed because he goes to this house where this guy is raping this kid, this little boy, and he, you know, basically kicks the door down and goes in and pounds the guy to a pulp, and then he gets court-martialed. You know, it kind of makes you wonder if that's the standard that our government allows over there just to keep the peace. You know, there's something that must be wrong. I mean, pedophilia cannot be just a cultural standard. You know, it can't be, you know, it's pedophilia in one place and not in another.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, one of the articles that I read is, and it used some phrase, I was kind of looking for it. There's some phrase that they used. It's akin to the majority. Once they become the majority, then this type of thing comes out and they don't hide it. This is kind of this enculturated disrespect for women, the lack of the social status and the legal status, and mm-hmm. how women are treated and, you know, enslaved and all these things. It's just terrible.
I'd like to go just a little bit further
on the
subject and point out that in the Catholic priest pedophile, so-called pedophile cases, a theory that's being floated right now by sociologists is they're determining that 80% of all the victims are actually posts, that is after pubescent boys. So in other words, these were actually homosexual priests that got into the profession, so they didn't look suspicious. Catholic priests don't get married. And then what they started doing was hitting on young men, not boys.
All right.
And then, so that's another place in our culture where, you know, it's just twisted sexual practices came about. And the Catholic Church got nailed. I mean, that whole scandal cost them over $1 billion at least.
No, probably at least. Yeah, and I remember there was I was living in Ireland and I saw this. It was Panorama, which is the longest running investigative TV show. And they had this story about this that was sent around to all the different dioceses in which it's told them how to handle sex abuse scandals. And it was basically, and this is, I think, started in the 50s or 60s, that it said to just bury it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad. But, you know, I think that it's like in Islam, if you set up a situation that's unnatural, it's unnatural for men to not have a chance to marry. If you, mm-hmm. you know, if you separate the sexes and there's, you know, there's no dating in Islam, it's all arranged marriage. If you set up a situation like that, there are going to, you know, the sex drive is so powerful. There are going to be other ways that people find to meet these needs. And so you've got this whole culture now. There are thousands and thousands of boys trapped in Pakistan, for example, being used. They're using them as sex slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. I don't want to leave you right now. I mean, I felt like I bashed the Catholic Church. I didn't want to do that.
Well, I understand. I mean, I don't want to either. This is one of the largest Catholic areas in the nation, if you look demographically. And
it's a beautiful, beautiful religion. If you follow the teachings of the Catholic Church, it's an absolutely wonderful religion. They just got a little sideways there with homosexuals infiltrating the priesthood, and that's that.
Well, and they say that you know, this came out of the Vatican decades ago. They said that we understand that more than 50% of the priests are homosexual. So, I would have no way to verify that. But
yeah, the stat I saw was it's around 38%. But yeah, I'm just helping reinforce your point. It's well more than a third.
Well, I mean, why doesn't the church consider? You know, this Pope is talking about go easy on divorced people, on people who have abortions and all this. And I'm listening to this thinking, you're the head of the church. Why don't you, if that's how you feel, why don't you change the papal law? You know, why not give absolution to people that are divorced? Why not give a forgiveness to people who have abortions? If you're going to get up and preach to people to not judge, then what right do you mm-hmm. have to keep your, you know, and there's this kind of crazy double-sided coin that this Pope is pushing. I mean, why not open up the priesthood to marriage? What, you know, according to historians, the reason they got rid of marriage in the church was because of they had these estates. And if the priest was married, then the family would fight for the estate. It wouldn't go back to the church. I mean, that's not a good enough reason, in my opinion, to keep people from getting married.
Yeah, I've heard that story too. And you know what? As our finalist president said, it's above my pay grade, and I just haven't studied the issue enough to really discuss it. I don't know. This Pope Francis is zany, is the best word I can think of. He's not a scholar like Pope Paul II was. John Paul II.
John Paul the Second had an extraordinary mind. I mean, just go.
He was
online something. And find "Crossing the Threshold of Hope," and you see that he gave this. He wrote this book as an interview. Somebody just asked him his opinion on stuff. It was just a beautiful book. And I believe he had 2 degrees in two doctorates mm-hmm. in philosophy. But anyway, we're running out of time. Anything else?
Yes, sir. No, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, folks. So I'm reporting this. I'm telling you about it. You can draw your own conclusions. Obviously, in the same way that all homosexual men are not pedophiles. Muslims are not pedophiles or, you know, engaging in these things. A lot of people come to this country and they like the rules here and they adapt and they enjoy themselves and they don't look back. But I'm telling you, there is a problem in the Middle East with this issue, child abuse. It's accepted doctrinally at some level. And the more Muslims that we bring in the country, the more we're going to have to deal with it. And there's no reason to bury our heads. Thanks for listening in, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And hope you have a great day. And going to be back tomorrow with Waltz and have a little local news. Have a wonderful day. Ciao. And take you out with a little Al Stewart.
The kind to live in the past. The years run too short and the days too fast. The things you lean on, things that don't last. Well, it's just now and then my line gets cast into the time passages. There's something back there that you left there.